Please stand by. Welcome, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, IMS Callout Techniques in an SOA World. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include live questions. In this teleconference, we'll discuss IMS as an integration focal point, as well as how the IMS callout function can help extend your business to invoke external application and web services. The speaker for today's program is Haley Fung, IMS Development. At this time, I'd like to turn the program over to Haley Fung. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Welcome to today's webcast. In this session, I'm going to talk to you about IMS callout techniques. Next page. The information contained in this presentation is provided for you for information purpose only. Next, I'm going to share with you the various callout techniques on how you can leverage and expand your existing IMS transaction and access to invoke external application servers. These techniques included in this presentation includes the DL1 call for using Insert Your Authoring PCB, the DL1i call by utilizing the ATPC calls, TCPIP socket calls, WebSocket MQ calls, as well as making SQL calls to call out to DB2 throat procedure. Next page. Traditionally, IMS has always been viewed as a backend server. However, IMS as an integration focal point is evolving, allowing external servers to access IMS as well as allowing IMS to access external servers. It enables IMS applications to act as a client to interoperate with business logic outside of the IMS environment. Particularly, there has been a lot of interest to have IMS to call out to applications and servers in SOA environment. For example, to have the IMS application to invoke a Java application or a web service in any distributed platform. This helps to maximize the reuse of IMS application for rapid business invocation and reduce cost. Next page. When we talk about IMS callout, it normally comes into two flavors, namely asynchronous callout and synchronous callout. This diagram will help you to review the asynchronous model. Asynchronous callout means that the IMS application callouts to an external application and ends. The output, if there is any, will be sent back to another IMS application instance to continue processing. In this diagram, it shows the flow of asynchronous callout. First, a client pulls a message onto the IMS message queue and kicks off IMS application 1. IMS application 1 calls an external application with a message and an application token. The external application gets the callout request message, the application token, and processes it. Then it sends a response message by scheduling an IMS application 2. The response message includes the response data and the application token. The advantage of using asynchronous callout is it does not hold up the region, but it does require the IMS application to be designed in a way such that it will be able to handle the output from the external application in a different IMS application instance. And the IMS application needs to manage its own application token to be able to help to correlate the request with the response message in the second IMS application instance. Next page. Another flavor of IMS callout is a synchronous callout model. In a synchronous callout model, the IMS application callouts to an external application and waits for the output to come back. You can see in this diagram, which will show you the synchronous callout flow. A client on the left-hand side put a message on the IMS message queue and kick off the IMS application. The IMS application calls out to an external application and synchronously waits for the response. The external application on the right-hand side of the diagram reads the message, process the data, and then send back the response data in a message back to the IMS application that is waiting for the response. The advantage of using synchronous callout is the response message can get back to the waiting IMS application rather than having a different IMS transaction instance to process it. In that case, you no longer need to provide your own application token to manage the correlation of the request and response message. However, using the synchronous model do require the IMS-dependent region to be held up in a wait state while waiting for the output from the external application to return. So now, let's look at the various asynchronous and synchronous callout techniques with IMS. Next page, please. First, we have the IMS manage DL1 calls, call insert to author PCB for asynchronous callout. It is an IMS DL1 call that allows IMS application to call another IMS program asynchronously. This diagram shows you a two-tier IMS manage request where the IMS application program A make an insert to another PCB and involves an IMS application program B. IMS application program B can be in the same IMS system, or by utilizing MSC, it can use to access program B in another IMS system. Each IMS program in this case will be running in their own unit of work. The IMS managed alternate PCB approach provides asynchronous communication between IMS and application, allowing one IMS application to call out to another one. Next page. In this approach, the application needs to know each other, and it only supports asynchronous communication. The IMS applications need to manage their own response correlation, and there will be no coordinate commit in the asynchronous call approach with the DL1 insert alternate PCB call. Next page. In IMS 10, we have made several enhancements around the auth PCB approach to make it easier to invoke application not only within IMS, but also to be allowing you to invoke application outside of IMS. For example, by making an insert auth PCB call, you can now invoke Java application running inside Web3 application server. It allows you to call out to web services or any role-owned applications using IMS Connect. Next page. One of the enhancements that we made in IMS version 10 for helping you to make asynchronous callout using auth PCB is the use of an OTMA descriptor. IMS OTMA descriptor enhancement in IMS version 10 externalize the routing definition and specification for callout messages without having you to code the IMS user message exit. The descriptor is being read at and initialized at IMS startup time. It allows you to define the destination type, the team member for the target OTMA member, the tpy which is going to store the callout request. You can also specify the super member. And also, you can specify the adapter and the converter name in the case that you need to call out to your web services and utilize the IMS Connect XML adapter function to help you to do the XML transformation. Next. Here is a flow to show you how the IMS asynchronous callout support is provided in IMS 10 by utilizing the descriptor through OTMA and IMS Connect. On the left-hand side, you can see a client by putting a message onto the message queue and kick off IMS Application 1 on the top. IMS Application 1 make an insert to alternate PCB call by calling out to OTMA descriptor that define in your system. Then you can have the external application on the right-hand side creating TCP/IP socket with IMS Connect to issue the resume tpy protocol to pick up the asynchronous callout message from the OTMA tpy as defined in the descriptor. Once it reads the data, it will send acknowledgement to acknowledge the receiver of the request message and process it and then send the response data back using the send-only protocol with IMS Connect. The send-only protocol will help you to schedule IMS Application 2 to process the response data. Each of these applications will be running in their own unit of work, and you will have to manage the application token yourself to help you to correlate the response message in the IMS application instance 2 with the IMS application 1. Next page. Another enhancement that we put in version 10 for supporting asynchronous callout is to allow you to call out to Java applications running in Web Application Server. In this diagram, it shows you how you can have your IMS application to insert your callout request by utilizing the insert auth PCB call and the OTMA descriptor, and have the message being called out to the WebSphere application via the IMS TM-RES adapter. IMS TM-RES adapter is one of the components provided by you by IMS, allowing you to plug in into any WebSphere application server to communicate with IMS Connect with your IMS application. So in this case, we can see we have initial client starting off IMS application 1. IMS application 1 inserts an open PCB to the destination for the target IMS TM-RES adapter and WebSphere instance. The call request message will going to be placed in the T-pipe TP1. IMS TM-RES adapter will utilize the resume T-pipe protocol to communicate with IMS Connect and go to the T-pipe 1 to get your asynchronous callout message. Once you receive message in step number 4, it will help you to send an ACK back to IMS Connect to confirm the retrieval of the callout request message. And then in step number 6, IMS TM-RES adapter will send the request message to the web application, for example, EJB or MDB. Once the EJB and MDB process it, it will send the response message by kicking off a brand new IMS transaction request to IMS Application 2. Next page. IMS version 10 asynchronous callouts also allows you to invoke external web services by utilizing IMS SOAP Gateway. IMS SOAP Gateway is a lightweight SOAP engine allow you to invoke any generic web service. So in this diagram, we show you how an IMS application can asynchronously call out to a web service through IMS SOAP Gateway. We have an initiate client kick off an IMS application 1, which can do an insert auto PCB to the destination IMS SOAP 1. The destination IMS SOAP 1 is being defined to put the callout request onto T-pipe 3, as well as specifying the adapter and converter information that will be used by IMS Connect to help to convert the IMS Application 1 application data, which is in bytes, into XML for your external web service to process it. So once the message is on the queue on T-pipe 3, SOAP Gateway will issue the resume T-pipe protocol to listen to and retrieve the caller request message. So you can see in step 4, the message is being retrieved by IMS SOAP Gateway through IMS Connect and OTMA. The message will be in XML format, and in step 5, IMS SOAP Gateway will send the XML request message in SOAP format to invoke the external web service and wait for the response to come back. When the responses come back, IMS SOAP Gateway will then send the XML response message back to IMS Connect. And IMS Connect will load the appropriate converter to help you to convert the XML messages back to bytes and invoke the IMS Application 2 to process the output message. Again, in this approach, the application will have the need to provide its own application token to correlate the response message in Application 2 with the request message in Application 1. And you also have to define and specify an IMS SOAP Gateway with appropriate connection bundle information such that it will hook up to the T-pipe 3 to listen to the callout request message. Next, the IMS feed 10 asynchronous callout message, it provides you the DL1 call support by utilizing insert and auto PCB to help you to invoke external applications. It will require IMS Connect, and you have to manage your own response correlation, and there will be no distributed coordinate commit in the asynchronous callout support. Next page. In addition to the enhancement that we made in IMS 10 for asynchronous callout support, we have also added an SPE onto IMS version 10 to enhance and allow IMS application to be able to synchronously call out to other applications outside of IMS. This is what we call the DL1 iCall synchronous callout support. With synchronous caller support, we are adding a brand new DL1 call called the iCall, allowing the IMS application to call out to external application like Java application in Webster application server or generic Webster through IMS subgateway, as well as any roll your own TCP/IP IMS application. The IMS application will be synchronously wait for the output to come back, and the output will come back in the same application instance. Next page. Here are a few solution highlights for the IMS 10 SPE synchronous callout support. First of all, we have added a brand new DL1 call for helping you to easily to make a synchronous callout request to external application. We have enhanced the existing OTMA, Resume TPI, and Send-Only protocol, as well as the routing descriptor functions to helping you easily to retrieve synchronous callout requests as well as sending back the response. IMS, in this case, will provide you a correlation token to help you to manage the synchronous callout request and response. We also have enhanced various IMS commands to be able to allow you to view the synchronous callout status as well as stop the synchronous callout processing. One of the key functions that we added in is the timer support. So in the case that if the response is taking really long to come back, you will have the option to terminate the call request and free up a dependent region. Finally, we allowed you to send messages larger than 32K without segmentation, such that you can easily send out big messages and be able to receive big messages in one single chunk, and you don't have to manage the segmentation or the buffering yourself in your application. Next page. This diagram shows you the flow of the synchronous callout enhancement that we have made in IMS version 10 SPE. You can see from the left-hand side of the diagram, we have a client kicking off an IMS application, which is going to utilize the new DL1 call iCall to send out a synchronous callout request message, which can be bigger than 32K, to one of the predefined OTMA descriptor. The descriptor will specify which T-pipe that the synchronous callout message is going to be located. On the right-hand side, you have the external application that's going to utilize the Resume T-pipe protocol to listen to synchronous callout request defining one of the T-pipes. So once the callout request is on the T-pipe, IMS Connect will forward that message onto the external application who is waiting for the synchronous callout request. The synchronous call request will consist of the callout request data as well as an IMS generated token. This IMS generated token will be used and will be managed by IMS to help to correlate the response back to the IMS application instance that's waiting for the response. Now on the right hand side again, once the external application receives the message, it will send an ACK to acknowledge the message and then process the message data. Once the processing is complete, the external application can then use an enhanced send-only protocol to send the message together with the IMS-generated correlation token using TCP/IP back to IMS Connect. IMS Connect will then send the message back to OTMA to IMS and then forward the response message onto the IMS application. Next chart. Let's look into a little more details about this new DL1 call. This new DL1 call has a sub-function call called send-receive and also allowing you to specify the request and a response area in two separate parameters. The new DL1 call is only supported on the AIB interface, and you have to set up the AIB with the appropriate information. For example, in the AIB, you will specify the OTMA descriptor name, the timeout value, the request area length, as well as the response area length. Next chart. The synchronous callout support also makes some enhancement into the OTMA descriptor that I just talked to you earlier. A new property called the same timer is added to the OTMA descriptor support. This same timer allows you to specify a timeout value, such that in the case if the response is taking too long to come back, IMS will automatically free up a region and stop the synchronous callout processing. The time of value can be specified in number of plays and will be very useful to help you to make sure that your dependent region is not going to block all the resources while waiting for the response to come back. You can specify the time of value in the iCall itself. You can specify in the descriptor. And if the time of value is not specified in any of those places, we have a default of 10 seconds as the default time of value. And note that if you have specified the time of value in both the descriptor as well as the iCall value will be used instead of the descriptor value. Next page. So let's take a look at a sample flow of the synchronous callout usage with a roll-your-own TCP/IP client interacting with IMS Connect and IMS. So this diagram shows you the flow with an IMS application program utilizing the iCall to send out the callout request to destination 1. The destination 1 defines the callout message to be placed onto the T-Pipe TBS. You will code a TCP/IP roll-your-own application interacting with IMS Connect by establishing a TCP/IP connection and then issue the resume T-Pipe request to listen to callout request on T-Pipe TPS. Once the callout request appears on T-Pipe TPS, IMS Connect will forward the roll-your-own application with the callout request data as well as the correlation token. The roll-your-own application will add the callout request. And then finally, when the response message is available, it's going to use the send-only protocol to send the IMS-generated correlation token plus the data back to the IMS application that is waiting for the response. Next chart. In addition to allowing the IMS application to call out to a roll-your-own TCP/IP application, you can also have the IMS application to send a synchronous callout request to Java application running within web application server by utilizing the IMS TM resource adapter. So in the case of the IMS TM resource adapter, you can build an MDB application that works with the IMS TM resource adapter inbound support to help you to listen for callout requests. So again, we have the IMS application. Insert a callout request message onto T-Pipe TPS. IMS TM resource adapter, when you deploy into web application server, you're going to configure an activation spec specifying that you would like to listen to callout request message from T-Pipe TPS. Then, when the TM resource adapter started by having it activated by the MDB application, IMS TM resource adapter internally will utilize the resume T-Pipe protocol to interact with IMS Connect and OTMA to retrieve caller requests from T-Pipe TPS. IMS TM resource adapter will get the caller request with the data as well as the correlation token. It will help the MDB application to send an acknowledgement to OTMA. And it also manage the correlation token internally, such that IMS TM resource adapter will only send the application data to the MDB application or the EJB. The MDB application or the EJB can then easily process the request data. They don't have to worry about the correlation token. And once the response is available, the MDB will send the response data back to IMS TM resource adapter. IMS result adapter will add the correlation token on top of it and utilizing the send-only protocol to send the response back to the IMS application program. Next chart. Similarly, you can also utilize the iCall function to send out to a generic web service by utilizing IMS sub-gateway. In this case, again, the iCall sent a request to destination 1, which has the caller request on the T-Pipe TPS. In the descriptor, you also specify the XML adapter and the converter to help you to convert the data coming from IMS into XML data. IMS sub-gateway, when it gets started, based on the connection bundle information, it will issue the resume T-Pipe protocol to listen to requests coming out from T-Pipe TPS. Once it got the XML request message with the correlation token, it will send an ACK message back to IMS and then help you to invoke the external web service using the protocol with the XML data in the payload session. When the web service responds synchronously with the XML response data, IMS sub-gateway will internally help you to utilize the send-only protocol to send XML data back to IMS Connect. IMS Connect will then load the appropriate converter to help you to convert the XML data back into bytes for your IMS application that is waiting for the response. Next chart. So as a summary for the DL1 iCall synchronous callout option, it is again an IMS provider DL1 API calls, provide direct program-to-program communication. It is a synchronous communications, and IMS in this case will help you to manage the response correlation. It requires IMS and TCP/IP connection, and there will be no distributed coordinate commit supported in the DL1 iCall synchronous callout support. Next, let's look at the other options for the callout techniques. We're going to talk to you about the APPC support. APPC is a standardized interface allowing you to communicate and do both asynchronous callout and synchronous callout to invoke other IMS applications as well as other LU6.2 applications. In this diagram, it shows you a sample of two-tiered APPC asynchronous conversation request where IMS A and Program A does an insert and alter PCB, which is an APPC IMS LU6.2 descriptor. The APPC IMS will establish an outbound only conversation to Program B, which can be in IMS A, in IMS B, or some other generic LU6.2 application. The application TPB can then handle a conversation and send the response data to an IMS application running in IMS A or B or another LU6.2 program. And you can see in each of these conversations, they're all running in their own unit of work. And since because it's an asynchronous call approach, they also have to manage their own application token. Next chart, APPC also allowing you to make synchronous callout. So in this case, you can see this diagram show you a two-tier APPC synchronous conversation request where the conversation begins with the IMS A Program A, which started a conversation with TPB, which can be, again, IMS A, IMS B, or some other LU6.2 application. In this particular example, with the use of the APPC protected conversation, all the work included in Program A and Program B are all within the same unit of work. So a few of consideration for using an APPC approach. APPC is a standard API. It provides a protocol for program-to-program communications, support both asynchronous and synchronous communication. For asynchronous, by utilizing alter PCB with IMS, we allocate the LU6.2 conversation. Response will again require an application correlation. In a synchronous approach, the work between the two programs can be in a single unit of work or multiple unit of work. So with this APPC synchronous approach, it does support a distributed coordinate commit. IMS will participate in coordinate commit as a coordinator or participant utilizing RF. In this approach, it requires both applications, both partners to be utilizing the APPC and code to the APPC protocol. The next approach or technique that we're looking into is by utilizing TCP/IP. TCP/IP, again, is an industry-wide standard and very open communication protocol which allows you to communication between program uses socket connection. This diagram shows an example of a two-tier TCP/IP connections where the socket connection begins with IMSA Program A, which invokes the TCP/IP Program B by utilizing a TCP/IP connection. Program B, in this case, can be an application outside of IMS utilizing the TCP/IP protocol. So Program A will first create a socket connection by specifying the host name and IP address of the target Program B. After the connection is being established, it writes the data to the socket and waits for the response. On Program B, first, it has to create a listening socket for incoming connection request. Then after it got a connection established with Program A, it reads the request data, processes it, and then writes the response data back to the socket, which will be sent back to the Program A. Program A reads the response data from the socket and finish the processing and then close the connection. In this particular support utilizing TCP/IP, each of the programs will be running on their own unit of work. So we have two UOW here for the first program and for the second program. Next page, TCP/IP is a standard protocol. It can be used to communicate with program within COS as well as outside COS. And the ZOS COM server provides you an API, TCP/IP API, that you can use for various ZOS applications, whether it's COBOL, PL1, etc. It provides you program-to-program communication. The protocol itself does not support the coordinate commit. So in this case, as I mentioned, each of them will be running in a different unit of work. IMS does not participate in any coordinate commit, and it requires both program to be coded to the TCP/IP protocol. Next page. The next approach we're going to take a look at is what's via MQ API. MQ can be used from IMS application for both asynchronous and synchronous callout support. So in this diagram, you can see an example on how an IMS application can utilize WebSphere MQ for asynchronous callout via ESAF. And a client schedule IMS programming to get started. You can then use the MQ API to make an MQ connection to MQ. Then you can put the MQ message by utilizing the MQ put call, and then the call request message will appear in the message queue. On the other hand, on the right-hand side, you will have the other program, which also connected to this MQB. It will issue an MQ GET request to get the request off the queue, and then finish by disconnecting from the MQ. And each of these applications will be having their own unit of work as well. Next page. Another option for utilizing WebSphere MQ is to go through the OTMA IMS bridge that support the MQ protocol. In this case, we had IMS program A trying to invoke an MQ program on the right-hand side of the diagram. However, instead of having the IMS application to code the MQ protocol by utilizing the MQ put in the previous case, you can actually leveraging the DL1 called the insert alter PCB, but then define the descriptor that is specifying your MQ destination. So in this case, the OTMA descriptor will specify the message to be ended up to connect to an MQ queue instead of a T-pipe. On the right-hand side, you will have the external program to hook up to this MQ queue and then issue an MQ GET to get the request message off the queue. And then after you finish processing, you can then put the response message to another MQ queue, which can then be picked up by another IMS application or another MQ application for further processing. Again, in the asynchronous approach, all of these applications will be running in their own unit of work. Another option with WebSphere MQ is to help you to call out synchronously. In this case, we're going to be utilizing the ESAF approach. So IMS program A is going to make an MQ connection call to MQB, and it's going to use the MQ put with a no sync point option, which is going to put the message onto the message queue. And in this case, it's going to wait, turn around, and issue MQ GET to wait for the response to come back. The call request message will be entered into the MQ message queue, which then the external application on the right-hand side can issue MQ GET to get a request message. When the response is available, it will put the message back to the message queue, the MQ queue, and the response message will then be retrieved by program A and finish the processing. Next page. There are a few considerations by utilizing the WebSphere MQ technique. MQ is also an open standard API call provides you program-to-program communication. It allows you to do both asynchronous and synchronous callout. In the asynchronous case, it's similar to the other option that we talked about for asynchronous. You can either use an alter PCB call or you can use an MQ call. It requires you to correlate the application response and request message. For the synchronous case, you have to make sure that you will be specifying the MQ no sync point option so that the message can go out immediately. There will be no distributed coordinate commit for this case. IMS will be the coordinate via ESAF. Connection needs to be, handle needs to be closed enough for the message to be sent out and received appropriately. And it requires both applications to utilize MQ protocol and API to get the response and generate a response message. Next, the last option that we're going to talk to you today is the through the TB2 start procedure. You can have an IMS application issuing SQL call by calling a TB2 start procedure that can then invoke an external web service. So in this particular example, you can see that IMS program A issue an SQL command to help you to call out to a start procedure. It is a TB2 start procedure that is going to get your SQL call. Now, the TB2 start procedure can use the user-defined function to call out to any external web service if needed to get your response message. So once the message comes back, the TB2 start procedure will get the data back to the IMS. One of the things you notice that with the TB2 start procedure via ESAF, all the work between the IMS and TB2 will be coordinated in the same unit of work. Next page, the consideration for using TB2 start procedure, it provides you, again, a synchronous communication between programs. We only support synchronous in this case, and we support TB2 to allow you to provide distributed coordinate commit. Next chart. So in this session, I have reviewed with you 6 different options for helping you to call out to external application from your IMS, making your IMS as an integration focal point. We have talked about the insert alter PC approach for asynchronous callout, the new DL1 icon in IMS 10 for synchronous callout. We review the use of APPC call for both asynchronous and synchronous, utilizing TCP/IP socket call for synchronous approach with WebSocket MQ for both asynchronous and synchronous callout, and finally, utilizing the TB2 start procedure for synchronous callout. So I hope you enjoyed this session. Thank you, everyone, and now I will hand it back to the operator.
Thank you, Haley. Now we'd like to ask that you participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we'll take your questions. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key, followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. For our first question, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. Or if it was low, press star 3. Question 2, was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference at the right level, press star 1, not technical enough, press star 2, or if it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Question 3, what version of IMS are you currently on? If version 10, press star 1. If version 9, press star 2. If version 8, press star 3. Or if version 7 and below, press star 4. Question 4, for those not on IMS 10, what is your planned use of IMS 10? If you plan to install IMS 10 in the next 6 to 12 months, press star 1. If you're interested in moving to IMS 10 within the next 2 years, press star 2. If you're not interested in IMS 10 at this time, please press star 3. And our final question, we hope you'd enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you're interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. And thank you all for your responses. At this time, we'd like to take your questions. Along with Haley today, we also have David Cameron and Jackie on. At this time, if you do have a question, please signal us by pressing star 1 on your touchtone telephone. Once again, that is star 1 for questions. We'll pause for just a moment. We'll go first to John Fife. Mr. Fife, your line is open if you do have a question.
I'm sorry, I was on mute. Okay, do I have to have CM0, CM1, or the AOS equals Y turned on to make this functionality utilize the shared queues correctly?
This is Jack Yuan. I can answer this question. You don't need to have AOS equal Y to use the synchronous co-op functions.
Okay.
It's AOS equal to Y is only when you are processing the transaction, input transaction in the shared queue backend environments, and you need to do that. But for call-out, it's a different solution. The application initiate call-out requests out to the external application. And we are using the, when we send out the data out, and we're using CM0. Do I answer your question?
Do I have to do anything special? Like right now in our environment, where all our transactions have been basically set up as a CM1.
Okay.
And so once I do your call, that will revert the process to make it a CM0 call?
Oh, no. It will not affect what you're currently doing.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's only affect the new application that using the call out.
Okay.
Hi, this is Dave Cameron. Just to elaborate a bit on that, Jack's right. I mean, the CM1 transaction that's currently scheduled will run and continue as a CM1 and do the send then commit on the output, and there's no change to that. The only reason that we call it CM0 for the sync callout is that the client, roll your own TMRA or SOAP gateway, that has done the resume T-pipe to get the sync callout has to do the acknowledgement back to OTMA to say that it got it.
Okay.
So that part of the delivery of the sync callout is CM0, and then the send-only response coming back into the application on the iCall. But from the application scheduled, the CM1 application, it would just issue the iCall to get the response and then continue with its CM1 transaction.
Okay, good. That answered it.
Very good, and thank you, Dave. Another two suggestion to everyone in the call is the team also authored two articles. One is published in the IBM Systems Magazine in January version. It's about the synchronous call-out techniques, pretty much just like what Haley presented. The second article to be published in the IBM Database Magazine about the new DRI call that we introduced. So we highly recommend customers to take a look at those two articles. Thank you.
Once again, that is star 1 for questions at this time. And we'll go back to John Fife.
Okay, on page 6, you had mentioned that you're capitalizing on MSC routing, I believe. If that's the case, is there a connection with the MSC that if the other L bar is down that you get notified correctly? And then how would I switch it? Are you thinking, or do you understand what I'm trying to ask?
Sorry, on page six, it's the...
On page six, when we were reviewing the synchronous model, it was mentioned that you're capitalizing on MSC to get to the external app, right? At least that's what I wrote in my notes. I don't know. Maybe I misunderstood what you're trying to do. But we've had issues with MSC where if the LPAR was down that we're trying to go for, we basically get a bad status code. And what I'm trying to figure out is, can I reroute at that direction to go someplace, try to go someplace else?
I get, sorry, so the input transaction is a remote transaction that's going to, or you're doing a message switch through MSC?
Well, right now we're doing trying to do a remote switch through via MSC, and I'm trying to figure out whether I can use this call-out process to try to get me around some of the issues that we're having. And so when you mentioned MSC on this page six, I had a concern because we do have problems with MSC at this point in time.
Yeah, I would think that the DFS MSC zero exit is probably a better place to determine the routing of available systems through MSC.
What was that, DFS?
There's an MSC E0 exit.
Okay.
It's a combination of a bunch of the old routing exits for program switches, input terminal, and you can determine a target system there. And some customers have coded for availability such that if one system isn't available, but another would suffice in a cloned environment or shared queues or something, then
okay.
You can target that.
Okay, cool. Because I thought the exits were coming out of IMS-10. Is that?
They're... I'm not sure if you mean the OTMA exits. There's the OTMA routing exits, which are the DFS YPRX0 and DFS YDRU0, are still there. The OTMA descriptors are just a different way of doing it. The OTMA routing exits are every bit as useful as they've always been, and there are conditions that you currently would still have to use the exits for. The descriptors were just an external way for customers to be able to code destination routing without having to code the assembler exits.
Oh, okay, cool. Thank you.
And there appear to be no further questions at this time. I'll turn the conference back to you all for closing remarks. Haley, David, Jack, do you have any closing comments for today?
Yeah, I would like to say again to thank you every participant in this call joining us to discuss the various call-out techniques. Thanks again, and if you have any interest in the chart, I also have my email address on the first page. So if you have any interest for any call-out techniques or any further questions that you can think of or any interest in other IMS solution or SOA solution, feel free to contact me. We were very happy to help you out in any ways we could. And thanks again for joining us for this session.
That concludes this IBM teleconference. Have a pleasant day.